Welcome to the Michael Porter Jr. episode of the Hoop Theory Podcast, aka episode 120, which is in honor of his career as a Denver Nugget. Couldn't really find an instance of 120 being a number of significance to him, but it just felt right to call this one the MPJ ep. Recording this one on the afternoon of Wednesday, August 13th in the year of our Lord 2025. My name is Logan Wertman. And before we get into anything, I'd like to first say thank you for listening. Please be sure to hit us up on Patreon or buy me a coffee if you would like to support us. That's patreon.com/hooptheory and buymeacoffee.com/hooptheory. All of our links can also be found in the description of both the show and the episode wherever you're watching or listening to this. We would also greatly appreciate it if you would rate the show, leave a like or a comment. Of course, be sure to subscribe and follow the feed. And lastly, we would also love it if you sent something into our mailbag for us to read and react to. Basketball related or otherwise, you can send those over to hooptheory.mailbag@gmail.com. And without further ado, let's get into today's episode, which is the Nuggets Corner, the long-awaited breakdown of their pretty awesome offseason so far. In this little segment, though, that I'm going to be recording sitting down here today, I'm just going to focus on MPJ, and also, I guess, now that I'm thinking about it, I wore my Vlatko Chanchar is good shirt in honor of him before I knew I would be in a time crunch recording this, so I should mention him as well, do that really quick up top. Vlatko Chanchar, moving on. I think he signed with a team. I know it's a team in the EuroLeague. I'm trying to remember, it is Milan's team, which is Olympianos or something like that. There's a couple teams like that that sound similar. I know I kind of mix up the name with the Greek club, one of the two Greek clubs that's called Olympiakos. Olympiakos is what they're called. And I believe the one in Italy, in Milan, is Olympiano Milan. Something like that, at least. That's where Vlatko Chanchar went. I'm sure you can tell the level of detail I went into with my research on this one. But happy for him, somewhere that he's going to be shining and playing, you know, a very major role, I'm sure. So that'll be fun to see. I'm going to be trying to keep tabs on him. I'm thinking about getting more into the EuroLeague this next season than ever before, seeing as they have their website. You're able to stream their website, I believe, for free. That might be something I need to look into as well to confirm. But regardless, just wanted to give him his flowers. One of my favorite Nuggets. Honestly, ever, to be quite honest, just one of those, you know, bench guys that never really got a real chance. Like every time he got in the game, there's just things that I saw from him. Obviously, there was like decision making things. He tried things, you know, that left a lot of people thinking that he didn't have what it takes. You know what I mean? Like he was a little reckless type of thing. But honestly, overall, like he just had such a small sample over and over again when he would get a shot before, you know, something happening, either him being pushed out of the rotation by somebody else popping, or in most cases, it was him just getting injured again. And despite how, you know, it doesn't matter really how long the injury took for him to rehab from, but like he would just have to be out for a little while, obviously. And so he would not be in the rotation anymore, which Michael Malone would eventually land on a rotation that would work, you know, that he saw some benefit in while Vlatko was out. And so then that would kind of solidify his place each and every time out of the rotation, you know, because he wasn't the level of player that was established enough that like when he's healthy, obviously you got to put him in the rotation type of thing. And so if Michael Malone nailed down rotation without him, then that's just the way it was going to be. He was just never healthy at the right times to really become actually part of one of those rotations, which I really do feel like he could have been. Like he was definitely that level of player, definitely should have been probably in some of those years. But, you know, just unfortunate with how it had to pan out that way. Vlatko, though, really good passing feel. Like just the things I like about his game, I guess I should go into a little bit. 6'8", 6'9", really switchable wing, good wingspan, very broad. I believe he was probably like 235, I would probably gauge him at by the eye. A lot better on defense than most people would guess. You know, he wasn't like super, super athletic side to side. but like he had some pop to him. Like he could bounce a little bit more than you would think. And he just had really good awareness and instincts on that end. Really good hands. Some of the best hands on the team. Like, and that's saying something, obviously, with Jokic being the guy there with the best hands in the world, maybe, probably, almost definitely, I would say. But Vlatko is something in that same, similar type of vein, you know? I think he had some of the best chemistry also with Jokic, would be ready for a lot of Jokic's passes that would be out of the blue. He would also find Jokic in ways that a lot of other players, role guys in that same position on our team have not in the past, you know? And also the reason why I think he stuck around as long as he did in Denver, why they gave him another contract after, you know, him struggling to stay healthy and be in the rotation at all, was because of his relationship with Jokic, them both being players from the Balkans, a similar age range. I think Vlatko's a few years younger, closer to Luka's age, I believe, actually. But still, he's been Jokic's best friend on the Nuggets roster, really, ever since he got there. So, but yeah, that's just the hill that I will forever always be a part of, or be on, be the captain of, is that Vlatko Chanchar was a NBA player, was a good NBA player. You know, if he was just given even like normal circumstances, I felt like the circumstances that he had, the career that he had in the NBA was just very unlucky with, you know, the way the health continued to hamper him. And that is very similar to the story of Michael Porter Jr., which is the player that we're going to be focusing on the most this episode, him and Cam Johnson, at least the guy he got traded for. Those two guys, you know, both MPJ and Vlatko Chanchar are both guys that have a similar story of, like, you know, health being something that's constantly plagued them. MPJ, I think, even in a more major way, in a different way, but in a more major way. Vlatko is a lot of just very tedious, worse timing, constant injuries, constant little bugs here and there, little ticky-tack, you know, type of injuries. MPJ, it's much more career-altering. In a lot of people's cases, probably career ending, especially the amount of them, the amount of career altering injuries and ailments and things that he's had and dealt with and continues to deal with. There's just very few players. I honestly, genuinely believe this. Very few players that if they were in the same position as him with all of the things that he has had to go through medically, that would still be playing basketball. Like, there's very few people that would be still doing what MPJ has been doing. And especially at the level that he's doing it. Obviously, he was vastly, like, grossly overpaid. That is, you know, an obvious thing. That's why this trade was as good as it was, you know, being paid like $40 million a year, but being played to be a max player, but always, you know, just ending up being our third and at most times fourth best player on the team. Sometimes, honestly, this season, he was might have been fifth at times, definitely at times, but I don't know about the whole season as a whole. But I was about to say Christian Brown would have been the guy that I would put in there over MPJ, definitely at stretches, at least during this season, with the leap that he took. And I also, as part of this, wanted to go into what MPJ means to me. It means to this really Nuggets franchise, honestly, but especially what he means to me and to, honestly, this show that you're listening to right now. I don't know if this show would exist without Michael Porter Jr., to be quite honest. I think I've said the same thing about the Jokic encounter all the way back in 2018 when me and Jacob and some other buddies of ours ran into Nikola Jokic at an Olive Garden in Lakewood, Colorado. If you haven't heard that story, go check out episodes 69. I think mainly that's where we tell the story. And then I think we talk about it again in the next episode after that for a short bit. But for those of you who have heard those episodes, I did, I think, mention back then that I kind of credit this podcast, or me being as deep into the weeds on basketball, me getting to that point in my life with that encounter. Because, you know, at that point when I had that encounter, I was pretty passive as a fan of basketball in general, and especially the Nuggets. After the Melo trade, really, was where I was still like passively a Nuggets fan, like I said, passive. But it wasn't like I was watching every game or anything like that, even close to that. I was more of like a 2K fan for the most part. And then even through like late high school, I kind of even was less than that for a little bit there. I wasn't even getting the new 2Ks. I wasn't really thinking about basketball all that much. But, you know, then that encounter with Jokic kind of reawakened a little bit that Nuggets fan in me, because, you know, I knew who Jokic was. I'd followed it closely enough to see him breaking out a little bit. But to be honest, the first time I heard of Jokic was like, I think I was playing 2K on the game that he was a rookie on. I think it was 2K16. And I was like, who's this random guy? And back then I used to do like the fantasy draft things in my league situation. So like I would have players on a bunch of different teams, different than what they're on in real life. I think Jokic was on the Heat, I want to say. And I had no idea that he was a player for the Nuggets at that time. You know, and I was kind of like, who is this guy? Why is he so good in this simulated league that I'm playing? He doesn't look like that he would be that good. But, you know, 2K, I guess, saw it early for him is what that was. But I was able to, I think, like maybe the next season after that, after his rookie year, where he really started to pop and I started to kind of notice him. So, yeah, I ran into him at Olive Garden. That made me kind of come back to the Nuggets a little bit. But that it was kind of that combined with that summer watching the draft, you know, thinking like, oh, am I going to really get back into the NBA? Am I going to get back into this like I used to be when I was younger? And I saw the Nuggets redesigns, the jersey redesigns. I think that was actually even after the draft, though. But in the draft, watching that, hearing all about, you know, MPJ being, and I think I had heard of him earlier in the season, too, because he was such a highly touted recruit coming out of high school. He was potentially going to be the number one pick. You know, that's what people were kind of projecting for him, especially back in high school. But even throughout the year, maybe it was just the health concerns that people didn't know about because he sat out his whole year at Mizzou because of the back surgery that he had to undergo. And then there was like even more red flags, I guess, from the medicals that teams got shortly before the draft. And then that scared a lot of people off of picking him. And it was a really, really good draft too. One of the best of all time. It's already aging that way. The 2018 draft with Luka and Trae Young and Jaren Jackson Jr. and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I could go on. But he was in that draft and fell all the way to 14th to the Nuggets. And so that was another thing that was like, whoa, I might just go, you know, head first back into this Nuggets thing like I was when I was a kid. Yeah. And then the jersey redesigns where they brought back, you know, some of the older designs, older like branding of things, which wasn't really a nostalgia thing for me because I grew up with the baby blue, you know, mellow uniforms that era. So, but it was just kind of a new, fresh like take on the Nuggets branding and stuff that I thought was cool. So yeah, that was probably the smallest of the three reasons, but that was just a reason that I do remember kind of that ignited or fueled me, you know, getting back into the Nuggets. And that's where it started for me as like a league pass, you know, like I'm getting league pass. I'm watching every single game. I'm listening to like NBA podcasts now, getting like all, I grew so much in my NBA nerd fandom and knowledge, basketball knowledge from that, especially, you know, that era is where that started. And there's no way I'd be doing a basketball podcast by myself, you know, starting to do that in the pandemic if I hadn't just 2 years before that dove headfirst into the Nuggets because of Michael Porter Jr. being drafted by the Nuggets and seeing Nikola Jokic in an Olive Garden. So I just kind of wanted to give this little sentimental like farewell, I guess, to MPJ, although I know it's been months now since he's actually been traded. But the, you know, the summer's been busy. I wanted to nail this perfectly, you know, which I'm still not probably going to do, but trying to do my best. I want to give a little bit of an anecdote at how I found out about MPJ being traded also, because I think that's a funny story. I was door dashing in the evenings like I normally do. So I don't hear, and I also have like all my notifications and stuff turned off on my phone because a lot of things are just distractions to me on my phone. So I don't have anything notifying me other than like text and stuff like that. So I tend to find out about like NBA moves and news a little bit later than everybody else, which is just, you know, something that I'm just have to accept, you know, I'm fine with. But so a lot of times Jacob will actually be the person who breaks news to me. And he usually won't even actually break the news. He'll just say something that's kind of like cryptic or like, what is he talking about? So I have to like look up to get context of like what he could be talking about because he doesn't really specify. He always assumes that I already know what he's talking about, you know? And on this one, he called me actually and was like, did you see the MP or how are you feeling? I think is what he said. And I was like, why? What happened? You know, and he starts telling me about the MPJ trade, but he gets some details wrong at first. Which is something that he's actually said on the podcast before. He's confused Cam Thomas and Cam Johnson in the past. But he was like, yeah, you guys traded MPJ to the Nets. And I was like, oh, Okay. For what? Like, what did we get? Did we have to give a pick? I'm guessing we probably had to give up a pick. And this was before I even knew who it was for, because of that albatross of a contract, obviously. And then he says, yeah, you gave up a pick, but you got Cam Thomas. And I'm like a little iffy on that when I hear that. To be fair, I actually didn't like completely hate that with a passion, because I was like, oh, okay, another guard, I guess, that could play off Jokic, get some buckets, handle the ball. But I was like, I don't love it. I don't love that, especially with giving up our 2032 first round pick. That didn't seem to, like, the best thing. But then Jacob actually went on to correct his mistake after he realized that he had given me the wrong name, that it was actually Cam Johnson. And at that point, I was like, what? Are you sure? Are you sure you didn't just make a second mistake now? Because that doesn't make any sense. Why would we get Cam Johnson for MPJ and a pick? That doesn't make any sense to me at all. I felt, to be honest, I thought the market on Cam Johnson was like, if you're going to give him like a negative asset back, like a contract that's way too big for the player that's on it, then I would think that they would at least need like two picks from the Nets' point of view. So I was just surprised by this poll, like the fact that this was on the table. Like, but I guess this probably wasn't on the table before because of this 2032 first round pick not being able to be traded before until this season, because this is the farthest out pick that we have on the board. You know, you can only trade 8 years out. And so, yeah, that was just surprising to me that we were able to pull that off. Even then, though, like, this pick must be being viewed as like a insane asset of some kind, that like people think Jokic is going to be long gone by 2032, which I actually haven't done the math of this in my head yet. But so he just turned 30. But yeah, last year, since his birthday is late February, mid February, last year was his age 29 season. So this year will be his age 30, which means that in 2032, the draft of 2032 will be after the 2032 season, where he'll be 36. I think, off of quick math, 36 years old, which I guess he could be gone by then. So that's, now that I'm saying this, it is a pretty enticing asset having that pick. But still, I feel like Jokic at age 36, if he's still playing basketball, there's no way the Nuggets are going to be like terrible. There's no way that's going to be like a top, three pick or something like that. I feel like that's probably more likely to be the 15th to 20th pick in the draft, realistically. So I don't really see that being that crazy of an asset as they must view it. But maybe they think they have something more with MPJ, that they can, you know, rehab his value and ship him off when he's a expiring contract next season. But I don't really see that happening either. But I guess I should mention, you know, Cam Johnson's making $44 million over 2 years, and MPJ is making $79 million over the same 2 years. So basically cutting his contract in half to bring on Cam Johnson, who a lot of people are saying is an upgrade, just one-for-one upgrade in the Nugget system, which I'm not saying that I disagree with that. I am a little bit more hesitant than some other people. Like, the way that some people word it is like, even say like, he's an upgrade in every single way, you know, type of thing. And I don't think that. I think there's going to be some trade-offs here and there when you go across the board of what they offer as players. But overall, I'm not against the idea for sure that Cam Johnson will be a more effective player in that role as the third scorer on this Nuggets roster. But I guess to focus more on MPJ and his tenure here, I think he's been really misunderstood as a player. You know, people kind of viewed him as a heat check guy coming into the league, and especially with those comments that he made in the bubble, which was essentially his rookie season, his first healthy season in the NBA, where he made the comments after a game that we lost, I think, to the Blazers in the playoffs, I want to say. I'm not sure who it was. It wasn't the Blazers, actually, now that I say that. I think I just conflated that because Damian Lillard had comments about this quote that MPJ gave afterwards, and Dame was not a fan of it. But the quote was, you know, like, he thinks that we're too predictable. The Nuggets are being too predictable by going to Jokic and Murray every play in the clutch, you know, and that they should diversify a little bit and give some other people, and especially him, you know, some shots, some touches in that situation. Which, yeah, like the thing is with MPJ, he's a quick trigger. He's like, he's that personality of guy for sure. And in his essence, like in his core, that's what he is. But like after that, and then after like just the way that Michael Malone handled really having a tight leash on him early on, like not letting him in the rotation at all with all of his defensive mistakes and mishaps and, you know, mental lapses on that end and decision making and things like that. Like, he really helped MPJ grow, and MPJ was very receptive. Like, I think that's often gone undersaid or like under, you know, looked, overlooked. It's gone overlooked that MPJ has adapted in the way that he has. Like, he's been receptive to coaching, to malleability, to like changing how he plays. Honestly, by the end of his time here in Denver, I think he overcompensated for like all the memes of Michael never swing the rock, Porter Jr., like all that stuff. I think that kind of really got to him. Like, one of my favorite bets to make in sports betting, I'm not advocating for anything here, but I just wanted to make this quick aside because I think it's applicable. But one of my favorite bets to make was for the over on MPJ's assists, because the line was always like 1.5, 2.5 maybe, assists per game, usually 1.5. And that was like a guarantee to go over. Like, he was always getting 2 or 3 assists every game. And if you know anything about the Nuggets offense, that's the spot on the offense that should be getting the least assists. Like, the way that the Nuggets offense runs is he's supposed to be the play finisher in those spots. You know, the ball gets swung over to him at a late clock situation or after like the primary action is run usually, or he, you know, he's like the option of like the wide open corner shooter that gets sprayed out to type of thing when Aaron Gordon's in the dunker spot on the pick and roll. He became this player, I feel like, with when he just had a sliver of defense being shown to him, he would be like very quick to swing it to another option. Like, when in a lot of cases, I felt like, no, MPJ, you are the best shooter on this team. Like, maybe like one of the best shooters in the world, to be quite honest. Like, just take the shot. So, like, honestly, I feel like he should have been more like his former self towards the end of his tenure here than he ended up being, to be quite honest. But just wanted to give a shout out to like the way he changed as a player that was often overlooked. People who were not like locked in Nuggets fans didn't really see it quite as much. Like, people continued to make the memes of like, they just saw him as that type of player, the shot chucker that just wanted to get his own shot off all the time and didn't want to playmaker, didn't want to be a team player. Like, he was very sacrificial of his role in a lot of ways, and he was also like very okay with, like, he received it well when the coaching staff would opt to bench him in crunch time. That continued all the way up until the end of his career here in Denver, where whenever there was something to change about the lineup, the closing lineup, it would usually be him. That was the guy, that was the trigger to pull. This year was a little bit different with Christian Brown being so young, and then also Russell Westbrook being the starter, the spot starter here and there. If somebody was out, sometimes it would be one of those guys. But a lot of times, even with those guys being there, it would still be MPJ. And I just felt like, you know, most people in his situation, they had earned their way past that level or that, you know, role on the team, being the guy to take the fall, you know, take the blame type of thing. I think it just kept happening because he was actually receptive of it and he was okay with it, which I think is another big thing that shouldn't go overlooked. Something else I'd like to note about MPJ is his resiliency. I honestly don't think a lot of players in his situation, I think I already said this earlier, I'm having deja vu, would still be playing basketball if they went through what he went through. He's had 3 back surgeries already, and I think he had the third one before he was even 25 years old, which is just unthinkable. He had the first 2 before he ever stepped foot on an NBA floor. And after the second one and his recovery for the second surgery, he developed nerve damage, which gave him a condition that's called foot drop or drop foot. I've heard both, but I'm not sure what is the more technical term. It's where your foot wants to always like push down. The front of your foot wants to go down, I believe. And so he had to wear this special brace on his foot every game that he played. It's crazy. You should look it up, like MPJ foot brace or whatever is what you should type into Google and see this interesting contraption that looks like a snake that's coiling around his leg. But he had to wear that every single game to keep his foot in a normal position. And the one game that he actually missed this season, he played 81 of the 82 games. The one game that he missed was because it was a road game where there was a mix-up with the equipment manager where they didn't have his brace. So he couldn't wear, or he didn't have, he might have to wear special shoes too to accommodate the brace even. That might have been what it was. But either way, it was either that they forgot the brace or that they didn't have the right shoe that molds or pairs with the brace. So he wasn't able to actually play. And so that's just funny. Like, technically, yeah, it is an injury for why he couldn't play, because it's the drop foot is an injury. But normally he would be playing through it. He just didn't have the proper equipment to. And then in the playoffs this year, playing through a couple injuries. For sure the shoulder. I'm trying to remember. I think there was another thing before that. He like maybe tweaked a hamstring maybe or something like that. But yeah, he was playing through not even having like a left arm essentially. His shoulder, he was wearing this big like football pad basically on his shoulder and couldn't really use his left arm at all. Apparently he couldn't even take off his own jersey by himself after every single game that he was playing in the playoffs. But yeah, he was still out there on the floor giving his all. So, and he had a couple actually big games even with that ailment. A lot of them he did not play well at all, but he was still like a guy out there for spacing and stuff. But there was a few games where he actually popped off and was a huge contributor through that. So wanted to give him a shout out there as well. Also defensively, the other thing that was like the thing with him early on in his career that couldn't, that he couldn't stay on the floor because of all his defensive mistakes. But honestly, over the years here in Denver, another thing that has gone very overlooked, that's going to be the key to today's episode. The key word is overlooked or underrated, or synonyms, you know, but his defensive strides that he's made, and also just the areas that he's good at defensively. Like, he still has those blind spots or those like areas defensively that's a weakness, which is sometimes he can fall asleep off ball or just not be very aware of certain like actions or schemes, you know, not be aware of the scheme that they're in or the offensive action that they're seeing being played at them. You know, little things like that where he'll have breakdowns still. And that's just something that's, I think, very hard to teach. Like there's some players that just, they don't have the feel or view of the game. They don't see the game the same way. And that might, you know, it's something that might make them better in other areas. Like, there's things that Michael Porter Jr. was just better at than everybody else. That's why he's in the NBA. And then there were some things that he didn't view or didn't see the right way. So he would have mental lapses like that. It's just kind of a give and take, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And like, the things that he was really good at defensively, though, was actually the hunting situation. When teams would try to hunt him one-on-one, he would actually hold up pretty well a lot of times. And just like the isolation coverage of a guard on the perimeter, he could shuffle and move his feet and stay in front of people like decently well for how stiff he was with all of his injuries and everything. Also, the main thing that I think his main strength was with the Nuggets defense, with how they have to like rotate differently than a lot of other teams, the way we play with Jokic blitzing screens up at the top or hedging on screens, you know, so the roller is free because we put two on the ball screen. And then usually it will be MPJ, who's the low man, to come over and protect the rim on the weak side from the roller. And he's really good in that spot, like rising up very vertical and blocking shots. He's got a lot of length and good timing, good feel on blocks as well. And then also being the rebounder down there on the block after a shot goes up because of where he is on the court when he's the low man, a very good rebounder. That's, I think, the main thing that we're going to see as a drop off or a fall off from going from him to Cam Johnson. Cam Johnson's not even close to the level of rebounder as MPJ, which is, I guess, not really saying much because that's one of MPJ's main strengths. But still, it's going to be something that I think that is going to be missed, especially, you know, on both ends, honestly, with his ability to rebound, his intuitiveness on when to cut and crash the offensive glass, I think was big. And that, like, crashing the offensive glass and cutting a lot of times go hand in hand. That's why I use the word cut there. And I think that, I'm not sure, like, I've heard a lot of people scouting Cam Johnson's game and watching Cam Johnson's game. I think that cutting is something that he's pretty intuitive about, but I'm wondering if there might be even a trade-off there because of a lot of times crashing the offensive glass and cutting, you know, they're pretty similar skills because a lot of times it's like the same type of situation. You're leaking into gaps at the right time. It's just sometimes it's when the shot is up in the air, and other times it's when Jokic has the ball on the baseline or on at the top of the key or on the elbow, and you're cutting into open space, finding a crevice to get into. That's something that MPJ was just really good at, and those are the type of things that you don't usually hear highlighted about players, But that was something that he was able to exploit or utilize, to become a very, very effective teammate for Jokic. Because that's what you need to do when you have a passing hub like that, when you're playing around somebody like that. So that was big, and that's something that I feel like is another overlooked thing about Michael Porter Jr. And then also, so far I think people might be like, oh, wow, if he's such this great guy, why is this a move that was even good for the Nuggets, And obviously there's trade-offs, like I said. The main thing is the financial part of this deal, to be quite honest. Just the fact that we're able to save like over $20 million annually on just having if he's worse than Michael Porter Jr., it's by a sliver, Like I said, I think there's trade-offs, and I'm open. I think I probably lean towards Cam Johnson being a better option in this role. Like, he's a better probably third, fourth, fifth option playing that spot on the court. But the thing is, MPJ, how he got overpaid, like a lot of people hated MPJ because of how he handicapped the Nuggets salary book because of his, giant salary and how he's not like playing up to what he's being paid. I don't really view that as his fault. It's not his fault he got overpaid. And I also don't even really blame the Nuggets all that much. Obviously, it was maybe a little bit premature, and there was like a little bit of iffiness even at the time that I do remember. But at the same time, I feel like a lot of people would have killed them, or like it would have been a tough situation if they would have really waited or not paid him, at the time. Because a lot of, this is just something that I feel like is overlooked, or coming back to that word. So take a drink. But it's something that I never hear pointed out, is at that time when he signed that deal, it was in the summer, in the offseason of 21, just after he had the best stretch of his career to end that regular season. After Jamal Murray went down. So right after we got Aaron Gordon in that trade for Gary Harris, the Nuggets went on an 8-0, run, looking like the best team in the league, looking like they were going to win the championship. And then Jamal Murray famously tears his ACL and all hope is lost, But then for a little bit there, it was like, wait, I think we might still be able to do something in the playoffs because of the way that Michael Porter Jr. has ascended. Like right after that, as the second option on the team, he was looking like, people do not remember the discourse that was being had about him at the time. And also like the numbers that he had, just look at those in that 21 game stretch. It was 15-6. The Nuggets went 15-6 over those 21 games, but he averaged 24 points and 7 rebounds on 56% from the field, 45% from three, and 85% from the line. And that mathed out to 69% true shooting, which is just unreal. Like, I'm not even saying that that's a realistic player. Like that's like Jokic type. That's better than Jokic. Obviously not the 24-7, but the efficiency, 56, 45, 85, 69% true shooting. Like, I don't think he was going to be that scorched earth consistently. He was probably going to come back down a little bit from that for sure. But, Perk, and this isn't the best example, but Kendrick Perkins, because he says some crazy things pretty frequently. But on ESPN, Kendrick Perkins was saying that MPJ was going to be better than Jokic. Like, he was going to be the best player, the franchise cornerstone for the Nuggets. That even then was a crazy take for sure, but just giving you some context for how good Jokic or good MPJ was at looking at the time, where yes, it was a stretch, but like for Perk and those other first take guys to give a take, they have to be at least somewhat reasonably close, to the actual range of takes that people are giving. Like they give like a nautical, click above whatever the highest take is that somebody's giving. And that ends up being their take. So you have to do some correction there, but still, if Perk was saying that MPJ was going to be better than Jokic and, or was better than Jokic, like he was our best player, that really is saying something. And to go to somebody who's much less hot takey, much more like respected around the NBA world, especially at this time. This is probably like the peak of Kevin O'Connor as a NBA analyst. And I remember him saying that when Jamal Murray returns from injury, that he was going to be the third option. Like, done deal. Like, that's the way that Michael Porter Jr. is playing right now. He's going to be the second option, and Jamal will be down a notch in the pecking order when he comes back. That's the way that people were talking about MPJ. And I just don't think people really remember that or, like, know that that was the trajectory that he looked like he was on for a little bit there, like a sustained little stretch. And then he goes out in the regular season still, tweaks something. It might have been his back even, but he tweaked something and was out for a couple games, came back and wasn't really playing at the same level the last, like, handful of games there at the end of the season. And then they went to the playoffs, where he was pretty absent for most of it. Like, he was not playing like he was, you know, before. And all of this came right after he had some sort of injury. He tweaked something. And, you know, we bowed out in the 4-game sweep to the Suns in the second round after beating the Blazers in 6 in the first round, which I think that series is another one that goes overlooked. I'm going to say it again. The fact that our starting backcourt was two guys, it was Austin Reeves and Facu Campazzo, that series going against arguably the best backcourt in the NBA and Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, and we somehow won that series. You know, Austin Reeves, I think I might have said Austin Reeves a little bit ago. I meant Austin Rivers. But yeah, Austin Rivers and Facu Campazzo were both completely out of the league not 2 years later. You know, that's the level of discrepancy we're talking about with the two backcourts there. But we were able to pull ourselves out of that series because I forgot to mention with the Jamal Murray injury, seeing MPJ playing the way he was right after that injury, thinking, oh, maybe we have a chance. That was also premature because that was before. Then Monte Morris was out for a little bit and is extending to the playoffs as we had Facu Campazzo playing in the playoffs. But Monte Morris got injured, and then Will Barton also was injured. So all of our backcourt players were just not able to play. You know, that's the way that went. But anyways... Yeah, I think Marcus Howard was getting real playoff minutes at guard. That was a thing that was happening. I don't even know if some of you listening know who Marcus Howard is. Like, and like, I'm talking about the basketball audience, the people who listen to my podcast that don't actually know who I am, you know? Anyways, though, going back to what I was saying, MPJ also is not playing well that series. So that's another cherry on top of how insane it was that we pulled that off. But the Sun series, he was even worse, honestly, where we got swept there. And he was just not looking right. Like, the way he moved, he was just looking, like, hampered or, like, not fluid, very stiff, even more stiff than he had been. And then we go to the off season, and it was, like, up in the air, like, all right, so was that just an injury he was dealing with? Which it really did seem like that's what the problem was. And in which case, look at what he did at the end of the regular season, that 21-game stretch. Against like real competition, like that looks like the player that you want to give a max contract. So I'm not defending it 100% because that, yeah, you're like looking at a tiny little sample and making a decision before you really need to, because this was after his second year in the league. So he was eligible for an extension, but it wasn't due. Like, you didn't have to sign it yet. And I will be right back to finish that thought. I need to take a quick break here for a second. All right, I am back now. It is a couple hours later. Had something I needed to attend to. But now that I'm back, I should be able to get through the rest of my Nuggets thoughts. So, like, do the whole Nuggets Corner off-season episode. Do it all here today, right now. I'm going to finish my thought that I was in the middle of when I had to skedaddle. I believe I was talking about MPJ, his contract, the Denver Nuggets offering him that albatross of a deal, how... It wasn't as egregious at the time, in my opinion, as people act like it. Like, people act like everyone knew the entire time that that was a terrible deal. There's no way that MPJ was ever going to live up to it. That type of thing. There was a window there where it was like, who knows what MPJ is? Like, people were saying some crazy things about what he might be. And so it was like the most optimistic, obviously, thought or projection of him to give him that deal. Like, that's, you know, the Nuggets were anticipating or betting on, you know, him panning out in that way, you know? And that was on the table at the time. But then he ends up tearing, or not tearing, but he goes up for a dunk 9 games in. And in his 9th game in the regular season, he comes out to a really bad stretch. It's like basically just a continuation of what was going on in the playoffs. Like, he's still tampered, like, which was very alarming. It was like, why does he look like he's moving, doing everything the same as he was back in the playoffs last year? Is he still hurt? And come to find out, he was. He was having, like, I think it was back spasms along with some other things in his back, like nerve things. But then he tweaked his back once again when he went up for a layup or a dunk. He missed it. I'm pretty positive he missed it. It was like a fast break play. I remember it happening, but I haven't seen it in a very long time. But yeah, his 9th game into the season, he got a steal or something on a fast break, went up for a layup, biffed it, and came down like holding his back. And then he went out and he had to have his 3rd surgery. That was when that ended up happening. So then he was out for that whole season and beyond. And, you know, Jamal was still going to be missing this entire season as he tore his ACL at the very end of the season prior. This was the 22 season. So it just plunged the Nuggets even deeper into this dark age that we had right in the middle of Jokic's prime, which is going to go down, I think, in history for his career as like a pretty big what if, or a pretty big like, how many titles could we have won? Maybe I think we probably would have at least one more. I think the Nuggets probably would have won 2 championships by now. If that Jamal especially, but also MPJ injury, if those had not occurred, those 2 major ones. You know, and I think the Nuggets being not like a super contender, you know, still a pretty good team every season, like a middling playoff team in the West, which is the most competitive conference in the world. You know, that just really held back people, I think, from seeing Jokic as the best player in the world quite yet. Like, I think he became that before he was actually recognized consensus league-wide as that. And I think a big part of it was just him not having the team around him that is, like, conducive for winning. Like, something that's at least passable, you know, to become, like, a real contender. He was raising the floor of, like, players that literally would not be breaking the rotation on other teams because of how terrible the, you know, injury luck was. And then also the injury luck with like the 2 players that are being paid the most money on the roster outside Jokic. And they were being paid just as much money as he was, essentially. And so then, you know, you're really limited on what you can do with trying to fill out the roster around that. You have 2 unplayable or 2, you know, just black holes of money on your salary cap. There's not much you can really do. Now we finally got out of at least half of that, and Jamal has, you know, he's back to playing, and you know, he's very up and down, but I think he's continued to be on a steady up after this playoffs and after this season. I'm higher on Jamal than I definitely was last offseason, that's for sure. Not as high as I was on him after the championship, and definitely not as high as I was on him in the bubble. But, you know, I think he's steadily climbing back to up to where I think where he really is as a player, you know, which is, I think, an all-star caliber player. I think he will make an all-star team at some point. Maybe I would hope, I would think maybe, you know, it depends. I wouldn't be surprised if he never does because of, you know, injuries or him just not playing up to the level needed, especially with the league getting deeper and deeper with all these really, really talented guards, especially in the West. You know, it's just gonna be tough, but he is that level of player. And if he has the regular season, the Jamal Murray regular season that I think everybody knows that he's capable of having, then it will happen. You know, it's just whether or not that happens or not. So anyways, I don't know how I got off on that tangent, but Michael Porter Jr., you know, underrated, misunderstood. I guess I just wanted to explain what he means to me as a Nuggets fan, and also why I've always in the past was like, I don't really want to trade MPJ because of everything he's done for the Nuggets, the attitude he's had as a Nugget, like just in interviews, the growth he's had and the way that he talks about his sacrifices, like being willing to just sacrifice for the team and everything. And he doesn't really treat it like it's a sacrifice. You know, it's just like, I'm doing it because that's what you need to do to win. Yeah, there's just, he had a lot of really good displays of that, of having the right stuff between the ears, you know, while still being like a swaggy, you know, bucket getter, hooper's hooper type of type of guy at the same time, if that makes sense. You know, that it's kind of like this dichotomy that I think MPJ is, that I think is also not really seen at its purest level. Like, I think people just see the one half of the dichotomy a lot of times with him, which is the shot chucker, like Jordan, think Jordan Poole, like that type of vibe or aura or whatever, you know. But I think he had a lot more depth, has a lot more depth. He's not dead. But, you know, there's a little bit of a Nuggets funeral for the guy. And I don't know if he's going to be that. If he still will have that same level of dichotomy in the situation he's going into in Brooklyn, where it's not a team that's going to be competing for anything. And he's going to have all the shots that he wants, to be honest. He's going to have a much larger role. So he'll probably just go full, like, headfirst into being what he, you know, naturally, or, you know, like the core thing that everybody sees him as, that he had to adjust and he had to, you know, suppress all these years. You know, he can just go fully into that. I don't know if that's going to be a great thing for him long term or not, but at least we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. But I guess to get into more, I explained a little bit, I guess, the differences between Cam Johnson and Michael Porter Jr. Cam is 2 years older. And, oh yeah, the health concerns. Some people would say, like, oh, Cam Johnson, you know, is going to be better. One of the reasons is because MPJ's health is, you know, can't be relied on. He always gets injured. And it's like, yeah, he's had all these health injuries and her health concerns, all these things I've just already gone into in this podcast. But Cam Johnson has had very similar track record, probably not quite as major of injuries, not even probably on that, obviously not as major of injuries, but he's missed a similar number of games in the past few years, probably even more, honestly. Definitely last season, he had much more less healthy season than MPJ did. MPJ played 81 of the 82 last year, like I said. I think Cam Johnson played around 60, 65, something like that. And that's like kind of the norm for him, like 50 to 65 range for games played on the year is what is expected for him. So it's not going to be like, if there is a trade-off there, it could be either way, just a little bit either way. You know, it's going to be pretty similar, I think, durability-wise. You know, you could make the argument in favor of Cam by saying, maybe MPJ is a ticking time bomb. Just, you know, any with that season where he had 81 games played this past year, he's due to have his next major thing happen. And who knows if he can keep playing basketball after that, you know, if you want to be really pessimistic about it, like following patterns, that's wouldn't be surprising, I guess, you know, but you never know with these kind of things. So that is one of the things on that comparison, Cam Johnson versus MPJ. I already talked about the rebounding thing, cutting thing, kind of go hand in hand. Relocation, I think Cam Johnson's going to have the edge there, being able to move without the ball along the perimeter, getting open for shots, you know, catch and shoot, attacking closeouts, putting the ball on the floor is a big thing. I think that's the main, that and IQ, just in general, like feel for the game IQ overall, are the two things that I think are going to be additive, or the additions that Cam Johnson will have in that trade-off there with MPJ. Just his ability to handle the ball and even play some pick and roll and things like that. So that is going to be a dynamic that is going to be new for us, at least at that, for that spot on the floor, you know. As a shooter, it's going to be really hard to be a better shooter than Michael Porter Jr., although, you know, he did have his stretches where he was down for sure, which that reminds me of the other thing I kind of wanted to mention with just doing an MPJ extravaganza, just with the moments in which he had his dry spells, like literally the worst shooting performance or streak that he's ever had in his career, like over like a 10 game sample or whatever. It wasn't quite 10 because, yeah, it was 5 games in the finals. Yeah, that's probably where it was exactly. Because I'm pretty sure he had a great Western. I want to say he was really good against the Lakers. I know he had at least one series in the championship run where he was, you know, fully locked in. I believe it was the Lakers series, I want to say. But anyways, the Heat series, though, that was a major dry spell. Like, he made like 2 or 3 threes out of, you know, out of 5 games. He takes like 6 or 7 probably a game. So you can do the math there, I guess. But yeah, not a good shooting performance. But he rebounded the hell out of the ball, especially in the clincher. I think he had 15 rebounds, I want to say, in that clinching game. So, you know, he was attributing in other ways. And also, he played really well defensively that series on top of that. Helped with the size factor. Like, Cam Johnson isn't quite as big as Michael Porter Jr. either. That's the other thing. Although Cam is big wing, like tall, you know, he's a little slim, even more slim than Mike, probably. Mike's shoulders are pretty broad, so I think he definitely has the edge over him there. But yeah, just as a pure shooter, though, Cam Johnson is, if there's anybody in the league that's in like the same class, like, which there are, there's a, you know, a handful of guys, Cam Johnson is in that same class for sure. And I think you can definitely make the argument based off of players that have come in and out of Denver that when you play with Jokic, you have your career best, you know, shooting seasons. You can get like a little bit of a boost to your shooting percentage. So, you know, making that adjustment for MPJ to Cam Johnson, they look like they are pretty similar, you know, on the same level of shooters. MPJ, the case that he had over Cam Johnson as a shooter is his percentages are definitely better. Although Cam Johnson's aren't bad at all. Like, they're literally like 40%, which is like that's like the gold standard, you know. But MPJ is like a couple percentage points consistently over 40%. On his career, I believe he's shot 42% from three. So, and I'm guessing Cam Johnson, I don't have the number right in front of me, but I think he's probably, I would guess like 39% on his career, like 38.7, 39.3 type of thing would be my guess. 39.2. Look at that. And then MPJ's is 40.6, actually. So it's gone down. Yeah, the last two seasons, he actually was just below 40. He was 39.7 and 39.5. So that 42%er was a number that I remember from a couple years ago. But but yeah, anyways, along with this deal, though, the Nuggets also got Bruce Brown, I think the same exact day, on a minimum deal also, I'll add, which is awesome value. He left to go get, you know, he was here for the championship year. He was our sixth man. But then he left in the offseason because he played so well. He had a career year that he went and got a bag in Indiana. They gave him 2 years, $45 million, I believe. And then, you know, he got sent over to Toronto in that Siakam deal. That's how the Pacers got Siakam. So he definitely served a purpose there in Indiana. But then in Toronto, it was a lot of sitting out, like, you know, because he was obviously not wanting to play for Toronto, not being a contender at all. So it was like in everybody's best interest for him to not get hurt, so sit out and see if the team can find a trade for him. And then he ended up going in a trade, but not really to another contender. It's just another place where he has to be a buffer. But he, you know, he was an expiring contract also, so that was probably the thought of it also, that he was just going to be free in the off season. Then he went to the Pelicans in that Brandon Ingram deal. So he got traded for two pretty good players, you know. Depends on what you really think of Brandon Ingram at this point. His stock is pretty down at the moment, but, you know, still all-star caliber player when he's right, you know. But anyways, so he had that big bag that he got in the offseason, and now he's coming back for even less than we had him at before. I think before, I'm not sure if it was a one-year minimum. I think it was like one of the, like, half MLE is what we had him at. I think it was like $4.5 million is what he was making of his first year here. And so, yeah, we got him for half of that this year for a 1 year deal. That's how badly he wants to come back to Denver. He's, you know, he has the Nuggets tattoo on his arm that he got after the championship. He's teased it with Nuggets fans this whole year, the past 2 years, really, that he's wants to come back. He's a fan favorite here as well. So glad to have him back. A good replacement for losing Russell Westbrook this offseason also. Will fill in that exact role even better, you know, more ideally. And then Tim Hardaway Jr. also got him on a minimum, which is just going to be really good depth being added in there. Veteran guy, you know, spark plug shooter, scorer, can also handle a little bit if you really need him to, you know, on the second side in bench units, you know, if it comes down to that. A little bit more reliable, you know, than the young guy that would be in that spot, Julian Strother. I think those two guys are going to be competing for minutes for sure, depending on whether or not Strother is taking a step up or not. That's, you know, that's what Tim Hardaway Jr. is here for, is insurance for that, you know. So that is my thought on that one. And then Jonas Valanciunas was the other move, which is super exciting. I was super excited about this move. And then all the drama that happened afterwards while it was up in the air was interesting. I'll try to unpack it here, and that's where we'll end today's episode. But Jonas Valanciunas, you know, he's all-star center in the past. I don't think he's ever made an all-star team, actually. But, you know, he's in his best years, in his prime. He was like an 18 and 12 pretty consistently. Really good center, just stat sheet stuffer, you know, as a big guy in there in the paint. And by far the best backup center Jokic has ever had. There's no doubt about that. He is a little bit older now in his career, 33. But last year, you know, I had him on my sixth man of the year. I'm trying to remember what I called it. The all bench team. That's what I called it. He was either an honorable mention. I think he was an honorable mention because of the technicality of him not, you know, the reason why his stats look so good is because he started a lot of the games, but he still qualified for all bench because he was below half the game started, you know, that type of thing. But if you look at just the games he came off the bench in, it wasn't like outrageous, wasn't near as good of a case. But still, I think that maybe he might not be like super fond of being a backup center. He recently just became a backup when he got to Sacramento because of Domantas Sabonis being there, obviously. But the Kings, you know, with his salary there, it's about $10 million a year. The Kings were trying to sign Dennis Schroeder. They really had an eye on him, wanting to sign a deal for him. And they couldn't really get to the deal that Dennis Schroeder was asking for with Jonas Valanciunas on their team. And so that's why they decided to dump his salary for somebody that I thought was completely untradeable, and Dario Saric, who just was a train wreck last season and is being paid $5 million a year for this next year. He's an expiring contract. They were willing to make that deal, trade a good, like the best backup center in basketball, essentially, for somebody who was unplayable last season, just to get off $5 million to take on Dennis Schroeder. I'm not saying that was a great idea. I'm just saying that was their idea behind it. But the thing that makes this really funny, what ends up happening after this, is like it just shows that there was no communication about this, about what each party wanted in this situation. Because Jonas Valanciunas, shortly then after he gets traded to Denver, where it's like obvious that Denver really, because we've been searching for a backup center for Jokic for years now, and finally seemed to have it. And then Jonas Valanciunas is rumored to be talking with Panathinaikos, the EuroLeague team in Greece, about signing a 3-year deal over there to play in the EuroLeague, and just, you know, abandoning his NBA contract. You know, I think the plan was he was wanting to get a buyout to do that, so where he wouldn't have to give up all of the money on his deal. He would get at least a good portion of it or something, in agreement with the team. And the Kings definitely would have been willing to do that, seeing as they traded, you know, they salary dumped him to take on a negative asset. Like, they definitely would have rather probably just, if they are smart at all, they definitely should have just agreed to a buyout with him there so he could go be free to go sign somewhere in Europe. And that way they wouldn't have his contract on their books anymore and they can sign Dennis Schroeder. But instead, they salary dumped him for a negative asset, and then come to find out he doesn't want to play in the NBA next season, apparently. But it sounds like he's come around to the idea because the Nuggets said they weren't willing to negotiate a buyout with him, that they are expecting him to honor his contract. But yeah, apparently this is all being done also. Like, he went and talked to Panathinaikos, and his European agent, his Lithuanian agent, was saying that they don't even need to tell the Nuggets, type of thing. You know, it was this whole thing. And also, Panathinaikos fans started attacking a bunch of Nuggets fans on Twitter. It became like a little bit of a war there. It was an interesting time, but I'm glad that it's all over now. Sounds like Jonas Valanciunas, at least for this next season, he has a 2-year deal left, but the second year is a team option. So who knows what will happen with that. But for this season, at least, we are going to have a functional, playable backup center that's like a traditional center that can do a lot of the same things that Jokic can at a micro scale. You know, good feel as a passer for a big, can stretch the floor also, really big, beefy, good rebounder, offensive rebounder, all that, short roll, really broad, can post up, get buckets inside, all that, you know. So we can run like just a copy and paste micro scale version of the Jokic offense in the second unit to try to tread water, with Jamal Murray sharing all those minutes. Ideally, I would think that's probably what we're doing. At least that's what the Michael Malone game plan always was, and I think David Adelman pretty much continued that in the sample that we saw from him to end the regular season last year, which was just three games, mind you. But so he definitely could make a change there, and it could be somebody else sharing the bench minutes as a stagger for, you know, as far as starters go. But yeah, I would assume it would be Murray. That would be my prediction, at least. But yeah, the other thing I forgot to mention about this Jonas Valanciunas thing that was interesting to me because of the miscommunication part of all of this, his two agents, apparently, he must have three agents, because people were talking about a Lithuanian agent that was doing all this negotiating with Panathinaikos. But on NBA Real GM, I believe it was some site that has all this information, the agents that he has listed for his NBA deals, at least, are Jeff Schwartz, which is, for those of you who don't know, that's Jokic and Jamal Murray's American agent. Also, he represents both of them. And then Michael Tellem, Arn Tellem's son, I believe, who is Ben Tenzer's childhood friend. Ben Tenzer is the new co-GM of the Nuggets. and so that's one of Valanciunas' other agents. He's childhood best friends with the co-GM of the Denver Nuggets. And somehow there was this miscommunication that Valanciunas was just going to go. He was in Athens. He flew to Athens to meet with Panathinaikos and have this, you know, negotiation and everything. When he's under contract with the Denver Nuggets, who just traded for him. So it's just kind of funny that all that happened. It's strange. But from everything he said, now it sounds like He's planning on coming and being a good soldier and playing. I don't know if he doesn't want to, I guess, or not, or if he's excited for it now. I don't know. It's also funny because like a year or two ago, something like that, I saw an interview that came up again recently because of how he's ended up on the Nuggets. He said in an interview back home in Lithuania, somebody asked him like what would be the perfect situation for him to ring chase, you know, at the end of his career, if he was going to, you know, just go somewhere to be a bench player just to try to win a championship and not make a lot of money, not be the star player on the team anymore, what would be the perfect situation for that? And he specifically said the Denver Nuggets and be Jokic's backup and talked about how good of a situation that would be. And it's like, yeah, that is a perfect fit for somebody, for Jonas Valanciunas, who, you know, at this age or this level of his career, if he wants to move into that phase, that is the perfect place to go into that phase at. So, yeah, it's just funny that he literally talked about that being the ideal place for that. And then he got sent there and then was like, I'm gonna go play in Europe instead. Probably that might have not been on the table, you know, as much, or he might not have considered that quite as much a couple of years ago, maybe, is the thing. But also, money in the EuroLeague is going up and up. There's more and more big deals being signed. So, you know, it might be a little bit more comparable to what he's being paid in the NBA now. I believe it was quite a bit less, but still, you know, I think the added benefits of living in Europe, I think for some guys who obviously are from there, that's a pretty big factor for some of them. Obviously, ask Nikola Mirotic and why he walked away from, you know, in his prime in the NBA to go back to Europe to play. So, yeah. Anyways, that will be it for today's episode. I think we covered everything as well as I can right now. So, that will be it. I don't think there was any new guys. Also, I guess Daron Holmes coming back. Daron Holmes the second. Having his official rookie season, he had an MPJ type situation where he tore his Achilles actually, and this before his rookie season last year in the summer league. He looked really good in summer league this year, and we have a two-way guy, Tamar Bates out of Missouri, who's like a four-year player in college, undrafted guy that we signed this year, who didn't look as great in summer league from what I saw. I didn't really watch all that much summer league, to be honest. I never really do, but he's supposed to be a really good shooter. His numbers are crazy in college. He's a 50-40-90 guy. So maybe that's somebody that pops. Who knows? But yeah, I'm really excited about the Nuggets roster. A lot of people are really high on him. I'm even higher probably than just like a normal person, seeing as I'm a Nuggets fan. And also, I do think, even when I correct for bias, I think the Nuggets should be for sure the second power ranked team, you know, the team with the second best odds to win the title this season. I think they should be pretty close with the Thunder because of that pattern of, you know, every team that wins the championship the past 7 years now in a row, all of them make it to the second round the next year at best and then get bounced out. So, you know, with that, it's going to be tough for the Oklahoma City Thunder to be the first team to repeat in this era. But if there was a team in this era to break the streak and repeat, it would be the Oklahoma City Thunder because of their youth and their pure just dominance last season. They were very, very dominant squad, and they're keeping all their players, you know, rolling over into next season, just getting better. It's going to be pretty, like, that's a pretty good formula for going back to back. I think they might do it. I think they should be the favorites, you know, for sure. But Denver, I think, is right there afterwards. Houston, I would probably put third. On that same type of level with Houston, I would probably have to throw Cleveland and New York in there just because they're in the East. And, you know, somebody's got to represent the East in the finals. So that's my thoughts on that. I don't know why I had to go into that little explanation there. We kind of had a similar conversation about that in the last episode with Jacob here, if you want to go listen to that one, if you haven't yet. But thank you for listening. Like I said before, we'll wrap this one up. Appreciate it. Stay happy. Stay healthy. I will talk to you guys. Maybe we will talk to you guys. Who knows? Maybe it's just me. Maybe it's Jacob again. We will be doing the top 10 players in the world at some point before the season starts, and then also go through our preseason predictions for the over-under lines for team wins, like we do every year. Both of those will be coming sometime before the season starts, so that'll be for sure. But I'm not sure what next episode will be exactly. So until then, I suppose, stay happy, stay healthy, and somebody will talk to you guys next time.